It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Wednesday the 26th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. To say that social media and online commenting have exploded over strife in Ferguson, Missouri might be an understatement. Twitter, Facebook, and commenting sections on media websites have been the forum for people to react and voice their feelings around the grand jury decision to not indict police officer Darren Wilson for the fatal shooting of Michael Brown. Gawker, a website not always known for measured journalism or discussion of said journalism, has changed some of its policy around commenting. And when the flood of comments came to the site's Ferguson coverage, site editors did not have a light touch. I called Max Reed yesterday and asked him about the company's response to comments.
We just recently set up a new feature that lets commenters and readers call our attention to specifically bigoted or hateful or even just spam comments.
And you expected some of this to happen over the night with the reaction to Ferguson?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think it's a surprise to anybody who's been following it that it is a flashpoint for discussions about race in America and that there are people with some incredibly ugly opinions.
And how many comments did you get and how many were flagged or basically unpublished?
So starting at 9 p.m. last night, which is when the announcement came down, we got almost 15,000 comments. 541 actually were flagged by users, which calls it to our attention by putting it in a moderation queue that we can open up on a page and see a long list of all the posts that our readers have said, you should make sure you look at this.
I thought it was interesting that at the press conference last night, social media was blamed for fanning the flames of strife around this case.
I think that the most important thing that we want to think about at Gawker and that we're trying to and sometimes failing but slowly moving towards is a system where we can allow people to speak their minds but make sure that people with disagreeing opinions come up against one another in respectful ways. The thing about social media that worries me is the idea that people are only ever meeting people with whom they agree, which means that you don't get much in the way of ideas that might challenge the things that you believe.
That's a tough road to hoe, though, right? Because you guys are erasing comments from the site that represent perspectives that most of us don't agree with, but that in a First Amendment society, one might argue that they should be allowed to exist.
Yeah. I mean, we're dealing with obviously a huge volume of comments. And as you say, there's some that are so beyond the pale that we can agree that they should just be shoved off. So the question is, what do we do with the comments in the margin? And the truthful answer is we make a decision then and there and we say, you know, this is edging so much towards blatant racism that I am just going to block it. And we try to be as transparent as possible about that process, which is one reason why I put up this post, so that our readers will always know what kinds of discourse we think is acceptable and see if we can, you know, try to come to some kind of understanding.
Max Reed is editor-in-chief at Gawker. Max, thank you.
Thank you.
This week, we got some prices on how much it'll cost customers to get Google's gigabit internet in the city of Austin, Texas, $70 a month. The company first launched its super high-speed internet service in Kansas City, where I recently visited a hacker house. Not as scary as it sounds. It's where an entrepreneurial landlord is renting space to young founders who moved to KC to benefit from Google Fiber. Guys like Hacker House freelancer Mike Collins, who I asked about the legendary speed of gigabit internet.
I don't normally just stare at a screen watching a download, but when it's when it's going that quick, it's hard not to.
Hacker House sits on State Line Road in an area called Startup Village with an RV in the driveway and a bunch of 20-somethings working on various projects inside. I got a tour from Chris Rule and Cuba Douglas, co-founders of the company New Appetite, which helps people discover new music.
Do you think you could might be able to show them around a little bit? Or?
So this is like the front room, and now we're walking into
the workspace.
The workspace. How many computers do you have here?
6 desktops.
Is this a 3D printer, Chris?
This is a 3D printer, yeah.
You've got a kitchen back here.
There's, 2 bedrooms.
I found Bryce Lenhart in his bedroom. He's the youngest roommate at 19, a developer who moved to Kansas City from upstate New York.
He's in there working away.
This is the room you never leave.
I got myself a mini fridge, so I don't need to leave.
I was going to say, you've got some chocolate-covered raisins here. You've got at least one monster drink over there.
Gone through a few.
A whole crate there. Okay.
The landlord of this crash pad, Benjamin Barrett.
How did you get involved in this?
Google Fiber was coming to Kansas City. Everybody was talking about it like it was going to change everything. So my wife and I kind of took the plunge. We saw this house. It was in the very first neighborhood that got Google Fiber. And we went for it and bought the house purely to run this program out of. There's several properties in this area now that all kind of were catalyzed to congregating here because of Google Fiber. Now Google Fiber is spreading out. You know, lots more neighborhoods have it now. So it's lost its novelty, but the Start Village continues to thrive because of the community.
How is it different now than it was 2 years ago, other than just maybe some more people being around?
That's kind of a difficult question. I mean, startups do business really quickly. Like, the whole idea is fail fast, right? So not a whole lot of people are just sweeping in and buying up houses. So, you know, of course, I would love to see more growth than we've had, but I think it's just all part of the nature of the beast right now.
I feel like everyone I've talked to since I've been here so far has these kind of mixed feelings about fiber.
My opinion has always been fiber is what you make it. You know, there are ideas out there that will totally crack open the internet with the next version of awesomeness using super crazy high-speed bandwidth. I'm sure of it. We're not there yet. We haven't discovered those things yet. But I certainly wish there were more people doing crazier things with Google Fiber than we've had. These guys here are all examples of people who have gone all in. They've moved to a new city partly for Google Fiber to try their business, their startup out. I wish there were more people like these guys.
Ben, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
If you want to see a photo of the people I met at Hacker House in Kansas City, you can find it at facebook.com/marketplacetech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.